Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Mary Johnson, and I welcome you into this community of hope, reason, and transcendence. Sharing the pulpit with me this morning is Dr. Robert Kokonyesi. Been attending this church since 2014 and a recent member of the church, so we're happy to have him with us. At this church here, we seek wisdom beyond our own experience. Here we open our loving minds to the mystery of wonder and the moral imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truth, both meaning and sustaining. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. Here we seek to apply reason to our understanding of our world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer a special welcome to you who are first-time visitors. And if you are new to our church, we invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of the gray hymnal and place the card in the offering plate or give it to an usher. And we'll be happy to send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 6. Through those doors, turn left, and the nursery is the first room on the left past the foyer. And in the front here, we have the spirit chair, which includes activities for any age. Anyone may go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to their seats. And children and youth are encouraged to attend religious education classes later in the service following the time for all ages. And their classes will be over around 11:30 or a little earlier. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And if you have announcements you want to have read on a Sunday morning, please write the announcements out and put them in either the basket over there or the basket here on the chancel. I have several announcements people have given me. Let's see. This is from Robin Strangquist, and I will say that May 20th from 9 to 2, we're having an indoor-outdoor work day. And she writes, along with the cleanup of the interior of the building on May 20th, the Sacred Grounds Group will be planting annuals, cleaning garden beds, removing weeds and invasive species, picking up sticks and twigs, pruning, edging sidewalks, and collecting trash. Please bring your favorite tools, paper bags, and gloves. Come for 1/2 hour or an hour or any time you can spare. All are welcome. And last year, the Sacred Grounds Group planted 6 new yews and 1 viburnum bush, grew tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchini, and a variety of herbs, and planted annuals. This was all done with a generous donation of church members. Please help this continuing project. If your spirit or body does not allow you to do yard work, please consider donating a small sum toward the purchase of plants, mulch, tools, paint for railings, or other permanent improvements. And there's a donation jar and a table in the K-Worker room. And contact Robin Strangman for more information. And Tom Cochran says, anyone with network connections in California, please contact him. Tom's right there. And Dorothy Wilson says, tomorrow, Monday, May 8th at 6:30 at the fireplace, we'll have another meeting of the Healing Energy Group. All are welcome, and please join us. And in your order of service, there is a take-home list of items that are needed for our upcoming personal care distribution on May 27th. Since September, we've had an average of 44 people coming each Saturday, and our monthly count ranges from 31 to 59. For the last few months, we've been able to provide reusable tote bags for those who came, and at least 2/3 of the people bring their tote bags back the next month. So we're not contributing to plastic bag litter. And there is a potluck lunch after church today, and all are welcome to stay for that. And now let us begin our time of worship with a prelude of church bells from the Unitarian Church of Colazo, Transylvania. By the time the bells are over, you're so all supposed to be seated. And I think you're all here. When the bells start, the minister usually leaves his home if he lives very close and gets to the church, and then the congregation joins him. I did forget one announcement. Next Sunday, we're going to have flower communion. We sort of forgot about it until Lucy asked this morning, are we having flower communion anytime? And I made an executive decision that it'll be next Sunday since it's Mother's Day. So anyway, so bring flowers for flower communion. The chalice lighting words we're going to read are not the ones in your program, so look at the ones on the wall. And the chalice lighting words come this morning from the Hungarian Unitarian Church, and please join in reading them as Mora lights our chalice. We light this chalice in remembrance of those who laid down the foundation of our communities in the spirit of freedom, love, and tolerance, to remember that true light will outshine darkness.
Have you ever received a postcard from a long-distance, rarely seen relative? What about a postcard that starts with the ringing of the bells? Decades of time or thousands of miles put those people out of sight and out of mind. But now, there it is, a shiny postcard in your hand. Maybe it makes you curious asking, what they've been up to all these times. Or it might make you dismissive. What do they want from me? I barely remember their names. Well, our long-distance faith cousins, the Transylvanian Unitarians, have been writing postcards for 449 years. From the very start of the officially recognized Unitarian religion in 1568, and this is a famous painting of that moment, Ferenc David, founder of Unitarian faith in Transylvania, gives this famous speech in the court of the king. These postcards have been piling up in religious journals, websites, and blogs, but they are hard to read because they are in a Hungarian language. I thought I might open a new window into the life and beliefs of Transylvanian Unitarians by translating those postcards. I lived in Hungary for 24 years, so I know the language and the cultural environment. I spent the last 3 decades of my life in the United States, so I learned the English language and became familiar with the essentials of the cultural environment. On top of that, I served as a translator for a combined 20 years in First Parish Unitarian Church in Bedford, Massachusetts, then in Elliott Chapel in Kirkwood, Missouri. In those years, I had the privilege to work alongside the likes of Kathy Cordes, Zizi, also known as Dr. Judith Galliard, David Keyes, Peter Abel, John Robinson. I stayed curious about these postcards all along, and I'm hoping to translate a few each coming year. So let's read the first one. Come, let us worship together. Please rise to sing our first hymn, number 352 in your gray hymnal, Find the Stillness.
Again.
Well, we have another story for the offering, another one that Robert gave me. He gave me the king one. And when I first read this story that Robert gave me to share with you for the offering, it took me a moment to get it. But maybe you'll be quicker than I. There was once a wealthy man who was near death, and he was very grieved because he had worked so hard for his money and he wanted to be able to take it with him to heaven. So he began to pray that he might be able to take some of his wealth with him. An angel heard his plea and appeared to him and informed the man that God had decided to allow him to take one suitcase with him. Overjoyed, the man gathers his largest suitcase and fills it with pure gold bars and places it beside his bed. And soon afterwards, the man dies and shows up at the gates of heaven to greet St. Peter. St. Peter, seeing the suitcase, says, "Hold on, I'm supposed to check this contents before letting it through." So he opens a suitcase to inspect the worldly items the man found too precious to leave behind. St. Peter then, with a curious expression on his face, said, "But why did you bring paving bricks?" Yeah. The morning's offering will be most sincerely and gratefully received. May it be lovingly given. We regularly take time in our services to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking stone or stones from the bowls as we enter the sanctuary or from the bowl here in the chancel. We allow the stones to focus our awareness on things that are the most important in our lives as we place the stones in the cleansing water of our community. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you're invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. Thank you. And now I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join in singing our next hymn, number 87 in your gray hymnals, Nearer My God to Thee. And I don't recall that we've ever sung this. From Reverend David E. Bumbaugh, Minister Emeritus of the Unitarian Church of Summit, New Jersey. We are the people whose religion is based on the practice of reason, freedom, and tolerance. Whether we are talking about Unitarians in Transylvania, India, the Philippines, England, or New England, whether we are talking about Unitarians in the 16th century, or the 18th century, or the end of the 20th century, that is our distinguishing mark, the style of our religious life, a fierce and abiding commitment to reason and to freedom and to tolerance. And that religious style, which is all our hallmark, was created and crafted in Transylvania over four centuries ago and is still cherished there by people who have suffered for their faith more than we can imagine.
This postcard was written in 2005 by Jakob Hasi Erika, whose current name is Orban Erika, an ordained Transylvanian Unitarian minister. The entire sermon that follows are her own words, including the title, Do Not Be Indifferent. The Bible reading is Luke chapter 10, verses 30 to 37. And behold, a lawyer stood up to him to the test, saying, Teacher, "What shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." Very few of us have gone through life without observing people who feel excluded because they are stricken by a disease, people who feel outcast because they have an illness, people who feel isolated because they have an affliction. Those of us who have been put in a situation where we felt vulnerable know all too well just what relief is a helping hand, even an attentive ear. At the same time, whether we be healthy or sick, we contemplate the question of our own demise. What will happen to us after our passing? Is there an afterlife? And what could we do to reach that afterlife? We all have found our own individual answers to these questions, but as life moves on, our answers are challenged, and we are compelled to search for additional meaning. Our introductory passage from the Bible gives us renewed motivation to explore our questions and to re-examine our human relationships. In our Bible passage, when Jesus tells the crowd of followers the story of the Good Samaritan, the parable is an answer to a question that comes from the crowd. From the crowd, a lawyer first asks a question, what he, the lawyer, can do to inherit eternal life. At first, he admits that he knows the law, and it tells him to love your God with all your devotion and love thy neighbor like yourself. But then he admits that he is not certain who his neighbors are. This lack of certainty appears to make the lawyer unsteady in his faith. So the parable of the Good Samaritan is Jesus' guidance that uses an unusual setting with an unusual selection of participants and suggests the conclusion, but never directly spells it out. Let's examine the initial settings in this parable. These settings themselves bring into motion the forces to re-examine ourselves. The location is set somewhere between Jericho and Jerusalem. The story doesn't require more accurate coordinates. The date of the story is not given. Most likely it's not important. Similarly, we're not told whether this is a true event. Maybe it never happened. The credibility of Jesus, our storyteller, makes this a believable story. From these circumstances, we rightfully gather that the meaning of this parable is not in the geography, but rather in the action that takes place. We see the victim in verse 30 as a traveler who was attacked by robbers, beaten, robbed, and left by the roadside. The story is set into motion by the arrival of the first person, who is a potential source of help, relief from the victim's point of view. Whenever we are forced to seek help, when we depend on any helping hand, such as when we are bedridden in a hospital, or when we suffer from an addiction, we develop a special perception of distance, namely the distance between us and objects and the people around us. We become more sensitized to people approaching us and passing us. In verse 31, we see a priest traveling the same road, but then when he gets the sight of the victim, the priest avoided him. The Catholic biblical translation describes this act as the priest seeing the victim but not approaching him. While it is true that the Jewish religious laws prohibited the contact of priests with dead bodies, however, this priest didn't make an effort to find out if the victim was dead or alive. We have to ask what kind of a law might have kept him from potentially saving a life, saving a human being. In verse 32, the action has a very similar outcome. This time it's a Levite who arrives at the scene, but he too avoids the victim. Levites were people charged with singing, playing music for religious ceremonies, and to assist Jewish priests. The Levite in our parable acted just like the priest. He displayed the same kind of indifference. Our parable takes an abrupt turn in verse 33 with the arrival of the person who will serve as the role model for human relationship. For this role model, Jesus selects a Samaritan, a member of a tribe despised by Jewish people. The Samaritan not only sees the victim, but perceives the suffering and the need for help. Catholic biblical translation here emphasizes the meaningful difference between seeing and perceiving, the difference between plain detecting and observing with readiness to act. We too can be a part of such difference when we look at events and occurrences in our own world. Historically, the adversarial relationship between the Jews and Samaritans went back to the times when Jews arrived home from their captivity in Babylon around 600 BC. At the time of Jesus, the word Samaritan was a diminutive, reproachful adjective. The alienation was so extreme that Jewish people avoided contact with Samaritans, and the Samaritans cursed the Jewish folks who traveled across their territory on their way to Jerusalem. It is with such an ominous background that Jesus places a Samaritan right at the center of this parable. The contrast of the helpful, actively loving Samaritan is not only a critique of the priest and the Levites, it is also a reprimand and humiliation of Jesus' audience. The Samaritan, as opposed to the priest and Levite, perceives the suffering and the need for help. The Carolee Bible translates his actions as a Samaritan felt sorry for the victim, and something was tugging at his heartstrings. In verses 34 and 35, we learn exactly the means by which the good Samaritan assists the victim, how he is reacting to this unexpected event in his life. Verses 36 and 37 serves as a sort of reflection on the story by referring to the question of the lawyer, and then provides an answer to it. The neighbor of the victim is who was compassionate to him. The neighbor is who can become compassionate through their acts, intentions, and demonstrations of those intentions. Verse 36 has a feel to it like Jesus is asking, what would you do? Who are you in this story? What are your intentions? Who models your own being? Not answering those questions is not a choice. You have to choose whether you are a neighbor or not. So by reflecting on a personal level, we ask ourselves, if we are neighbors, can we become neighbors? Well, at the beginning, we could passively listen to the story. Now we are moved to action by the story. We are forced from our convenient, passive position. We are moved out of our indifference. We are becoming the message of the story. We can't stay indifferent at the sight of human suffering, deprivation, and vulnerability. Leo Bascaia, an American psychologist, said once that the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference and disinterest. Those we saw embodied in the behavior of the priest and the Levite. The conclusion of verse 37, you go and do likewise, is a call for action for all of us. This channels Apostle James, whose letter states that a faith without deeds is dead. Psychologist Eric Fromm said that because love is an action of faith, so if someone has little faith, he may have little love. He also said that if love guides your way, then the destination is not important, because it's the experience that enriches our hearts. Our parable is an expression of this action of love. The priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan are all traveling, but only the Samaritan, who stops to help the victim, and then he follows it up by attending to him. Through his actions, a Samaritan opens up a new perspective for the victim, opens up new possibilities to tomorrow. That illustrates so well the love that is predictably responsible. The Jews and Samaritans have one shared identity. They are both human beings, and in Jesus' reasoning, that shared identity is sufficient to bring about the action of love. That shared identity is sufficient to bring about the personal trust to allow us to become the neighbor of someone. It is entirely up to us which role we will play. We choose the point of view. Do we see a dead on the side of the road, or do we see a living? And then, what do we perceive? Our choices provide the answers to the questions we asked at the start of our service. You go and do likewise. Amen. Please rise now in body and spirit and join in singing our final hymn, number 108 in your gray hymnal, My Life Flows On in Endless Song. We will sing two verses.
Through all of time.
Please join in our unison words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. For our benediction, let us go forth from this place refreshed in spirit, deepened in our conviction, inspired by our compassion to love and serve the world and its people. Our service begins when this service ends. Go in peace.